We are proud to say that BetDSI have rejoined us once again as one of our keynote sponsors on 3 yards per carry. We welcome them and we welcome you to join up with them. The NFL season obviously kicks off at the weekend. The college football season has just got underway, but it's not just limited to football. The baseball playoffs are coming. There are a myriad of other sports out there that you could bet on. There's entertainment things, there's politics things at betdsi.com. They have a great app. I've used it myself. I know the boys have used it too. They have a great mobile interface. And you know, this year you can get 101% match bonus on your first deposit of up to $1,000. That's 101% match bonus on your first deposit of up to $1,000. Use the code YARDS101. As always, YARDS101. BetDSI for all of your betting needs and other ones that you probably didn't even know existed. Yards 101 with BetDSI.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, but before we go on with today's episode, let me tell you about a great sponsor of the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast, and that is AutoNation. If you're looking to buy or sell a vehicle, AutoNation is where you want to go. They're the largest auto retailer from coast to coast, and the friendly and knowledgeable staff here in South Florida will help you save big on huge selection of new cars, trucks, and SUVs, Toyota, Honda, Chevrolet, Mercedes-Benz, and much, much more. If you're looking to buy pre-owned, shop AutoNation's huge selection of one-priced pre-owned vehicles. They're all clearly marked with one price, their lowest price, guaranteed. Or if you just want to get rid of that old car, turn it in for cash today. Get a top dollar offer and check the same day. They'll buy your car with no purchase necessary. Is your check engine light on? Right now, get their services you need at low AutoNation prices. Oil changes, tires, batteries, and more. All for less. Call or visit AutoNation.com to schedule your appointment today. If you are in the market for a new car, DM us at 3 Yards Per Carry. That's at the number 3 Yards Per Carry on Twitter. And I'll give you an AutoNation senior manager your info so they can reach out to you directly and walk you through the buying process. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. I have Chris Kaufman with me. I don't have Simon Clancy. He is still in Tokyo. We're hoping to have him next week. Well, Chris, there was a lot of news today in the owners' meetings, as reported by Barry Jackson. Roger Goodell gave basically the blessing to this tank job because he says there is no tank job. Nobody's tanking. He doesn't see any tanking going on. And actually, a few owners actually gave their blessing to what the Dolphins are doing. So I guess we're in the clear.
I think so. Seems like it. I don't know. You never know by the end of the season. But yeah, I mean, it'd be hard for them to go back on their word now. So they clearly looked into it, though, and that's the point that Simon tried to make earlier today a couple of times on Twitter. Is they looked into it and they decided that what was going on wasn't blatant enough for them to actually think about doing anything. What he did do is he put the kibosh on the lottery idea.
Yeah.
The draft lottery idea. And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. It's obviously Goodell that said it, but I wonder who actually holds sway as far as that decision, because as long as I can remember, Jerry Jones seems to act like he's like the grand poobah in those owners meetings.
Yeah.
But have you noticed how every single one of his proposals gets shot down? He wanted the 7th playoff team, shot down 2 years in a row. He wanted 18 games, shot down 2 years in a row. He did not want a 17th game, and that looks like what might happen.
Yeah.
He did not want to get rid of 2 preseason games, and that looks like it's what's going to happen. So I guess Jerry Jones is not the one who's running the show there. So who is?
I don't know. I mean, and clearly Jerry Jones has been total anti-Goodell and league office ever since the whole Ezekiel Elliott thing. So, I don't know.
Maybe he's lost some favor with with Goodell, and maybe Goodell.
It's probably, you know what it is. It's probably probably what's his name? The fucking the guy who hires trafficked women to do things to him. What's his name?
Bob Kraft. No relation.
Bob Kraft. Yeah, that's the one.
No relation to the Kraft cheese. None.
Yeah, none. No relation whatsoever.
Yes. Yeah. And yes, I did make that mistake the first time I heard of Bob Kraft. I was like, good Lord, the guy that owns Kraft cheeses now owns the Patriots. But no, he has nothing to do with Kraft cheeses.
The guy with a crafty legal team who gets him out of trouble.
But there was also some other news. First of all, you know, it was reported that Brian Flores is in no danger of being fired this year, which is not interesting at all, because I think that's something that we all knew. Now, I did a 305 live yesterday where I was asked.
Poor sucker.
Yeah. I was asked, let's fast forward a year and what are your expectations? And I was saying he can absolutely be fired next year if the team does not look like it's making any, is not on a upward trajectory. Like, let's say 6 wins. Like, this year, it looks like we're a safe bet for 0-16 or 1-15, okay? That looks pretty safe, I think. If they don't go 6-10 next year, or even 7-9, if they have one of those bang-up off seasons, I could see, and the team looks kind of stale, I could see where they could fire Brian Flores. What do you think?
I don't think so. If he goes from like no wins to 6 wins, like who in their right mind is going to be able to justify that?
I think that's progress. I'm talking about if there is no progress. Like, let's say they go 3-13 next year after they have this bang up off season where they're expecting 6 or 7 wins.
Well, he's not getting any of the blame for this season. No. And like none. So it's almost like, yeah. So it's a little bit of a weird thing. So whatever he does next year, even if it's just like 4 wins or 5 wins, is going to be looked at versus 0 wins and said, clearly he's got them in the right direction. And everybody, you know, there's a thing, and it's, I guess it depends on how you win or how you lose too, and what the nature of the season is like, but there's a thing that the owner has to pay attention to, and that's appearances too. As much as people may not like that, you have a coach that you hired. Everybody knows that you bombed him intentionally in the first year, and he's got zero responsibility for that. So now they're going to be looking at, okay, he improved you by 4 or 5 wins or something like that, theoretically. Why would you fire him for doing that? And so the appearance it would be a really bad look, and Steve Ross just wouldn't do it. I think in actuality, he's probably, you know, 90%+ guaranteed to be able to coach 2021 in addition to 2020. But, you know, I guess it also depends on how you do it too.
Yeah. So 2021 could be his expectations year, is what
you're saying. Yeah, I think that's the one word. That's a big expectations year. And I think that improvement in 2020, but it doesn't have to be, you know, I don't think it has to be a very high bar in 2020, but improvement there. And then if in 2021, like, it's still not, it's not looking good, like, I'm not talking about 11 wins, but if it's not looking good, then yeah, he's on the hook. He could probably be out by then.
Yeah. I would say that some aesthetics as far as next year are kind of important. Like, you want a little bit of excitement, especially if you do get Tua Tagovailoa. You want the team to have that, I guess, 2018 Browns look, where they went 7-8-1, but they were kind of exciting, and they played a bunch of exciting games. Something similar to that.
Yeah, but I don't think they need to in order for Brian Flores to stay, to stick around.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be looking at it versus the 0-16. Yeah. This is the worst team. I mean, it's still, even though they almost beat the Redskins, this is still the worst team that the NFL has seen in the modern era.
Yeah.
So, and it's being being viewed and looked at, and today sort of, you know, signaled even by Miami management that this is not Brian Flores' fault, and that he's not on the hook for this. So whatever he gets out of the 2020 team, you know, 4 wins, 5 wins, whatever, it'll be bad by NFL standards. You'll be like, oh, wow, that's a 4-win team. That's not a good team. But it'll be looked at as like a serious improvement. So I don't think the standards are as high as you might otherwise think. I don't think they have to be a 6-win or 7-win team. I think, you know, it's going to be looked at as improvement versus 2019, which is not his fault.
Okay. Now, another thing that came out of this is that Josh Rosen benched Ryan Fitzpatrick back as the starter. We'll start against Buffalo this Sunday.
Coincidental that this is happening during the owners meeting when, you know, at the same two. So three things came out today, right? Mm-hmm. And they came out in like quick succession. I think the first one was, no matter what, Brian Flores is safe.
Yes.
A. B. Roger Goodell.
No tanking.
I don't see any tanking. C. Ryan Fitzpatrick's the starter. Is that a coincidence? I don't think so. I don't know. Because, like, you know, Brian Flores is like, okay, I'm good no matter what. Then I'm going to start who I damn well want to start and who I've wanted to start from the beginning of this thing. Yeah. It was obvious that he wanted to start Ryan Fitzpatrick all along, right? And so now he gets the all clear, like I'm good no matter what happens this year, including if I win too many games and we don't get to it. You know, then so he's like, fuck it. So okay, I'm gonna go Ryan Fitzpatrick. And also the other thing is though, is with the Goodell thing, it's like I don't see any tanking here and them starting Fitzpatrick. It's sort of like, I wonder about that. I wonder if somebody wasn't like kind of giving them a message like, listen, you better start the best guy. Yeah. Or else, because we all saw that the offense was terrible with Josh Rosen at quarterback. And this was the one quarter that Ryan Fitzpatrick took over for him. In this Redskins game was the most lively we've seen this team look all year. Yeah. And it's like, and you're going to start Josh Rosen anyway, you know.
And I was thinking to myself, you know, you kind of want to start getting some type of an evaluation on guys like Mike Gesicki and Devontae Parker and Preston Williams. And even Albert Wilson, like these are guys that you want to know if they are in your plans going forward. And to put it mildly, with Josh Rosen, that wasn't going to happen.
Nope. It wasn't happening at all.
Okay. So these are guys that, you know, at the end of the season, we know for a fact what we need. Okay. We know that we need complete overhauls of the offensive and defensive line and probably the entire secondary as well. So those are three units. So you kind of have to have these.
It looked like every unit. I'm sorry. It looked like every unit on the Dolphins. I mean, let's be honest. They were losing. They were getting housed on offense and defense every single game. And it was a death spiral. There was no energy on any side of the ball and nobody was looking good. You struggle to think of any player that was looking good that can say, well, I did mine. You know, or I took care of mine. And I think that's the context that you have to view their, because this whole season is supposed to be shopping in their own closet. Like, hey, you know, what guys do we have on this roster that need to be here? And then we'll go get some more.
Yeah. I want to say that they want to find at least 20, but they hope that they can find 25 guys. I doubt that they'll find 25. I think they'll find 18 to 20. That they'll want to keep from this group, but I don't think you'll know if you have 18 or 20 if you keep starting this guy who just doesn't let your offense function. You know,
and it's the whole team. I mean, so when Fitzpatrick came in that fourth quarter, I mean the whole team livened up. It was defense and special teams too. And it was, there was like no doubt in anybody's mind they were going to complete this comeback and tie up the game, which they did. Well, except they went for 2 points and botched it. But yeah, there was, it's just like the fact that there was no doubt and they were working on special teams and they're working on defense. And that's a look that you have not seen from the Miami Dolphins at all for a single quarter of 2019 yet, and through the first 4 3/4 games.
Yeah.
And so, that's the only way you're going to start to find, be able to identify players is like, oh wait, maybe this guy can stay, or oh wait, this guy, you know, this guy might be pretty good after all. It wasn't going to happen otherwise. It was going to look like all 53 players needed to just be dumped. Yeah. It's a death spiral. It feeds on itself.
Yeah. So what happens with Josh Rosen going forward? Can anything be salvaged? Because I have my doubts as to whether a backup quarterback can be salvaged from this, because he doesn't seem like he's getting any better throughout this year. He had basically a layup for him in this game against the Redskins. He had a couple of plays where they're completely on him, those two interceptions, and he doesn't seem to be getting any better. Like, this was his time to actually shine in this game. It was an opportunity, and he completely failed.
Well, he started faster than he had finished, right? I mean, he started people were looking, I think it was the fourth quarter of the New England game where he threw some deep passes, he just basically kept throwing deep, and that was all he was doing. And I cautioned people about that. I was like, I know it looked impressive because there are a couple of nice deep balls that were dropped, but this is all he was doing. He was just saying fuck it and throwing it deep, and then the Patriots caught on to that, and it ended pretty, you know, it ended pretty quickly. But he started out quicker than he finished, and he was getting worse and not better. And so that's the way it was. If he would have started all 14 games, this guy couldn't be here in 2020. I mean, I told people this from the start when it was announced, he's like, he's going to start now. I was like, well, they're going to play 14 games with him. By the end of this, they can't even roster him next year, because that's how much value he's going to piss away. Surrounded by this bad, bad team, and he's not a very good quarterback anyway. So, taking him out now makes them look like the bad guy, makes the front, you know, the coaching staff and front office look like the guys that don't know what they're doing, and everybody's going to be crying about, everybody's already crying about what the evil Miami Dolphins have done to poor, poor Josh Rosen.
Yeah,
so,
the national media is actually cooperating with us.
So, I mean, that's a good opportunity. That's a good opportunity. If everybody's on his side, then they still think he has value. And so Miami can play the bad guy and bench him again, and then only start putting him in games when it's a favorable spot for him to go in there and like do what he did against New England and just say fuck it and throw deep and maybe connect on a few of those. And that might be able, he might be able to hold value that way. He might be able to hold value like in trade. He might be able to hold value as, you know, a legitimate option to carry into 2020 and compete with Tua Tagovailoa, or whoever we get. Yeah, I think this move does preserve his value. And if they would have let him just keep going, I mean, it would have been great for going 0-16 if they would have let him keep going.
Yeah.
I also said that. I was like, listen, I'm in the tank. I'm one of those tank guys now. And even though I'm kind of a little bit reluctant about it, and that means that I would rather have Josh Rosen be the starter, because everybody kept going, oh, you just want Fitzpatrick to play. I was like, no, not really. Putting Josh Rosen out there for 14 games to me means 0-16 and hello Tua.
Yeah.
You know, he already guided one team to the number one overall pick, and magic happened again.
Yeah.
So that was set to happen.
Yeah. Now,
we'll see.
I had to, you know, scratch my eyes as I saw this, but Robert Condici and Quadria Tankersley are active and practicing and expected to play this week. What the hell do you make of this?
Wouldn't it just be the weirdest thing ever if, like, Quadria Tankersley in this man-oriented defense, which should fit him, but we've been writing him off forever because, you know, the body language coming out him about him has been so bad. But what is that body language really? What has it really meant? Because, you know, the body language on like, for instance, Jerome Baker was really great, right? You know, like, yeah. Oh man, he's so awesome. He's going to do well. And, you know, and no. And it was bad on Raekwon. He was getting hurt. He was, you know, behind. He was losing his job, and he's one of the keepers. All of a sudden, so wouldn't it be fitting if Quadria Tankersley, who coming out of college, you would have said, you know, that's a man-oriented corner, and now he's playing in a man-oriented defense. He just all of a sudden starts playing, and you're like, wow, like maybe he's the guy opposite Xavien Howard. It would be so. I mean, that would really just top it all.
Yeah, and let's face it, his problem was twofold. Injury, because he did have some real injuries. He didn't have any fake ones. He had some real injuries, okay? He hurt his knee. He hurt his ankle. But Matt Burke just hated him, and I think we could say that now.
Well, he wasn't getting the defense either. I mean, that's his responsibility. That's his responsibility. He wasn't getting it, and I don't know if this is going to be considerably easier or not, but you know, we'll see. But I do know that they last year, New England under Flores, played the most man of anybody in the league, or maybe second most. I think it was first most. But so, you know, this it has the potential to be easier. And so I'm actually looking forward to seeing it because I did like him coming out. I mean, he was a good corner at Clemson.
And he had his moments as a rookie. He had his moments.
Sure. He was okay. Initial moments. I thought he kind of tailed off. But
yeah, the Atlanta game, namely.
The New Orleans game. And Drew Brees himself kind of came up and gave him a little love and was like, you know, hey, that was really good.
Yeah. Well, we're done talking about, you know, the bad. So let's talk a little bit about the good.
Pretty much all bad.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Well, you know, it depends on how you look at it. Okay.
Well, we almost won.
As soon as that game was over, I still see an L up there. You know what I mean? Just like I'm famous for, I hate it. One of the things I hate the most is when people start grading wins. I despise that. Because guess what? If you have 14 shitty wins, you're 14-2 and probably the best record in the NFL. Okay? So I despise people that grade.
Boy, you're really hating Nick Saban.
Oh my god, did you see him against Texas A&M? You would have thought that they lost 70-0. It was insane. He was despondent after that game.
Yeah,
but yeah, he knows
his defense is shitty.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, but yeah, I despise that. Okay, you win 13-12, guess what? I'm fine with it. We'll worry about it on Tuesday about what went wrong, but come Monday, I'm happy that we got the W. So we got the loss, we got the L. That's all I care about. I'll worry about the rest during the rest of the week. But the good was these quarterbacks, and not all of it was good because it was actually
Quarterbacks?
Yeah,
our quarterbacks, surely not our quarterbacks.
No,
Ryan Fitzpatrick, maybe.
Well, one of them is going to be our quarterbacks. I'm talking about the college quarterbacks.
Oh, okay, the quarterback.
I'm talking about Joe Burrow, who is going to give a brief introduction to our listeners here today, Tua Tagovailoa, and Justin Herbert, who seems to be a guy that everybody hates. Let's start there. There's a quote out there. RotoWorld just came out on my timeline, and there's an NFL scout. That, of course, he's not going to, you know, be named, but Mario Cristobal, Oregon Ducks coach, got into it with this unnamed source, basically, saying that this is a bunch of nonsense, that he's never coached a quarterback with a higher football IQ, That's a Mario Cristobal quote. But this quote is basically that Justin Herbert will get his first coach fired. What do you make of that, Chris?
First off,
I know you're not the biggest of fans.
First off, refresh me. What quarterbacks has Mario Cristobal coached?
Well, FIU, but to be also fair, he was recruiting coordinator at Alabama. And there's a certain guy that we want that I guess he gets credit for.
Really?
He was there. He was a recruiting coordinator at Alabama when Tua Tagovailoa got recruited. So who gets credit for that? Nick Saban?
I don't know, man. That's iffy to me. But, okay. But he didn't coach him.
He did not coach him. He was
recruiting. He did not coach him.
No.
At Alabama, Alabama, he would have, if he was there and he was taking credit for, I mean, he was always an offensive line guy, but if he was taking credit for the guys that he coached at Alabama, then we're talking about what, Blake Sims and AJ McCarron and some, maybe even if you go back far enough, there's some fuckheads that were really awful.
Some fuckheads that were really, really awful.
Yeah, it's escaping my mind right now. The guy in particular that I'm thinking of. But I'll think of it. No, I'm not thinking of Blake's. Oh, Jake Coker.
Oh my God, yes.
I meant Cokehead. So, Jalen Hurts was okay. Jalen Hurts was there but he was not. He was not Mr. Football Instincts anyway. As far as what Mario Cristobal is talking about with Justin Herbert, I don't know. I don't think. I think when I watch Justin Herbert play, I think it's obvious that he's more talented than guys that we might compare him to, like Ryan Tannehill or Josh Rosen. Yes. There's more that he's taller. He's got a, you know, better athleticism and movement skills, and obviously, you know, throw it through both sides of the barn. You know, but yeah, if he can hit the side of the broad,
he will attempt.
If he can hit the broad side of the barn, he's going to throw it through both sides.
He will attempt passes that the other guys that we like probably wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
so
is also a bad thing.
So yeah, but so clearly there's talent there. He's more talented than those guys, and that means I look at that sort of talent as really kind of a high floor thing. I don't think of it as a high ceiling thing. That physical based talent. So there's only so bad he's probably gonna. He probably can be with. And you think, look at him. He's a good. He's a bright kid. Very bright kid. You know, he does have a good football brain. I think the scouts love him for that. I think he's a good student. He's good locker room. Just everything really checks out on him. It's very similar to Carson Wentz. If you look at the story that Carson Wentz was coming out of North Dakota State, mm-hmm. Very similar. And so there's talent there. I'm talking about like the floor here, you know, there's talent there. That said, I watch his games and I'm just constantly seeing the same shit as I constantly see from Josh Rosen. Like it's 60% of the plays or something like that. It's like you're doing something wrong. Like it's either you're holding ball too late and you're not showing the anticipation. You're not showing awareness in some manner. You're not working the pocket in some way that you're supposed to. He keeps messing it up, and really the most often it's ball placement. Most often it's really just ball placement and accuracy. Just, man, why that guy hits the wrong shoulder more than a lot of other guys.
He's a thrower, yeah, instead of a placement guy, which is,
well, yeah, he's the ball. Well, he's not. I wish he were on the numbers. His ball placement is generally not good. And the accuracy can be spotty too. Like the consistency of the, you know, he misses some throws. He's not, supposed to miss. So yeah, I think that that's the worry, is that that's why some coach is going to get fired, because he's got all this talent and it's very enticing, but then you turn around and one day you're going to be like, how come I'm not winning games? And, and it's going to be because, you know, he's holding it late on this play, and then wrong shoulder on this play, and then missing him on this play, and then fumbling on this play, and, you know, are not working the pocket. I mean, I saw him, there's some things that he does in the pocket that I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, that is, you know, what instincts are those? That's weird. Like, why would you do that? So yeah, that's what you have to worry about with him. And I think that that's why the scout is probably right, is, you know, he is waiting. He is going to get some people fired, I think, as a pro, but then again, it might also look pretty good as a pro one day. Mm-hmm. So it's enticing, but man, does it cut both ways.
Yeah, I had a guy last year who used to be in scouting circles. He used to be actually a scout. And I think I told you about this guy. And he told me that when he was with his last team, which I believe was the Buffalo Bills, that they had a comparison of him to Ben Roethlisberger. And that a lot of their tape, a lot of their write-ups leading up to that draft in 2004 was eerily similar to what they're seeing with Justin Herbert. Mm. So I took that to mean a good thing, but that could also mean a bad thing, because a lot of those traits that Ben Roethlisberger has that are not necessarily good traits, Herbert has them in spades.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and remember Roethlisberger early in his career, he made a lot of bad decisions. And that kind of, I mean, he had that big arm and he was very talented, but he threw a lot of, you know, he threw a lot of balls at the defenders and they didn't necessarily all come away with interceptions. And I think that when you have, so this is something that people don't necessarily appreciate about a super strong arm, is it's hard for defensive backs and defensive players to intercept the ball sometimes. I've seen Jordan Love throw the ball directly into the hands of a defensive back, but because he just friggin' rocketed it there, it just broke the guy's fingers, and you know, he comes off the field like holding his hands and was like, ah, you know, like it's hard. Like, a professional receiver catches the ball, catches those big
I remember there was a play once, and I'll take you down nostalgia lane, Dan Marino. There was a defensive back they used to give Dan Marino fits for the New England Patriots. I believe his name was Ronnie LePet. I don't know why that name is stuck in my head, but I think it's Ronnie LePet.
Isn't he related to Tony LePet?
Maybe he's his father or something. You know, in fact, I'm going to look him up. Ronnie LePet.
Yeah. I remember him.
Okay. And there was a play once where Dan Marino. Yeah, there he is. Ronnie LePet. Yeah, played against Dan Marino. He was a cornerback for the New England Patriots. There he is. He actually lives in Melbourne, Florida right now. Okay, so that's him.
Ronnie. How you doing, Ronnie? He's a listener.
Okay. There was a play once where I remember Dan Marino started looking left and turned right and tried to throw to Clayton on an out route, and Ronnie LePet just read the play. Mm-hmm. And it hit him right in the hands, and he dropped it. And Ronnie, you know how defensive backs do, where they put their hands on their head, and they're like, I can't believe I just dropped that, right? And Dan Marino had walked right up to Ronnie LePet and told him, you weren't going to catch that anyway. Like, basically telling him that thing was humming, you dropped it for a reason. You know what I mean?
I think it's true. I think Ben Roethlisberger threw a lot of those early in his career, and defensive backs didn't hang on to them, and he got better. I mean, he was so talented that he bought himself time to get better as a pro, and he did get better as a pro. And that's the hope probably with Justin Herbert. And we'll see if it works out for the coaches that are coaching him. But yeah, I mean, with him throwing fastballs like that, you know, he'll get bailed out of some of those would-be interceptions, I think.
Yeah. Now let's move on. Our favorite, of course, Tua Tagovailoa played Texas A&M, had his worst pass of the year through an interception. But
it wasn't that bad. I thought he
threw late and threw into a crowd, and I thought he was a little greedy. He got a little bit greedy when he didn't need to be greedy, when there was other things he could have gotten. I felt it was completely unnecessary to make that pass in that spot.
Well, what I noticed when he throws a pick is he usually throws a pick because a defensive back is in a spot he shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Or at least relative to the defensive look that they were giving him. Mm-hmm. When the defensive backs are successful in playing games and disguising things and reading keys and sort of off-roading, I guess, then that's when he throws a pick. And I'm fine with that, to be honest. I'm fine with a college player that looks like that, because at the next level, they're going to continue to get better, and they're going to see disguised coverages a little bit better, and they're going to learn those lessons of, you know, when not to throw that ball. But yeah, I'm fine. I'm really like, you don't want to see is interceptions because of, you know, stuff that this guy really had no excuse not to see.
Yeah.
And in this case, you know, I think he had on the left side, he clearly, like, one safety, the safety on his left-hand side had to be in man coverage of this receiver. And so, you know, that's what he was seeing there. And on the right side, I think he just thought that the other safety would find some work, but instead the safety read the eyes and the tendencies, I think, and kind of freelanced over as a free safety and robbed the ball. And it was, you know, it was a good play on his part.
I
didn't think it was that bad.
I thought he passed with flying colors, the test with flying colors. This was going to be the best defense he had faced all year, and he did fine. And I especially liked how he managed the game as it started getting a little bit more chaotic toward the end with Texas A&M making a comeback. I loved the way he managed the lead and really didn't give away an inch, and actually gained an inch by scoring a late touchdown. So I thought he was fine. I thought it was a good performance. You know, we're waiting to see more. I'm pretty sure we're all waiting with bated breath to watch him against LSU.
Something to bring up though, and I saw this brought up earlier, because he gets a lot of criticism. He's like, oh, all he does is throw slants, you know, and shit like that. It's like, listen, if you are familiar with Tua Tagovailoa's career, okay, and last year in particular, but then you know this dude was throwing deep all the friggin' time and was making plays that way deep. And this year, you know, so this year they changed the offense up a little bit to try and be more effective and be, you know, and not get so hamstring when teams can, defenses can take away the deep ball. And now he's getting punished for, oh, all you do is throw slants. And he's, they're being more versatile as an offense, and he's getting to his third and fourth reads more often, and he's anticipating. I mean, the speed, and it's really all about speed with him. It is all about speed from the moment the ball is snapped. I don't remember seeing a guy's feet work that quickly, his body work that quickly, and get into the throw and get through the throw that quickly.
And it's throwing. So he hits. It's textbook. It's absolutely.
It's not. It's more than textbook. I haven't seen textbooks. Textbooks aren't written this way. I mean, he's doing it faster. He's doing it at blinding speed, and he's doing it before the time. He's doing it slightly before the timing, the timing window is meant to be done. And the reason he's doing it is because he's often anticipating these openings and these windows. And if you hit it, the earlier that you can hit it, the more you actually maximize that separation, because the separation doesn't last that long on some of these short passes. And, you know, so he's getting into it quicker than just about anybody I've ever seen. And that's one of the reasons that the separation is maximized. And he's not just getting into it that fast. He's hitting it right on the front shoulder, right at chest level. so that the guy can just run right through it without even thinking about it. And he's not killing them with, you know, those finger breaking passes either. Mm. And so even though I think he has it in him to drill it a little bit stronger if he wanted to, but he's throwing a very catchable ball. And with absolutely superior ball placement and accuracy. And it's the timing. The timing is so friggin' dangerous the way he gets that ball there so fast. I think it's, you know, like I said, that's better than textbook. That's not textbook to me. That's because that's unique. It's odd the way he does it.
Absolutely. Although one thing I do want to study more of, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, it was just something that me and Simon were talking about in the WhatsApp chat, is that we had noticed twice in that game he had rolled to his right and thrown to his right and had skipped the ball to his target to what was essentially pretty much wide open guys on the boundary.
Yeah.
So I would like to investigate what really happens with him when he rolls to his right and throws to his right to see if maybe that is a weakness. Okay, now let's move on to one of our favorites, a guy that I was pretty high on. I've been less high on him the more I watch Tua Tagovailoa because I'm starting to see pretty big differences. And he had a rough one, although it was not all his fault. Okay, we have a I wouldn't call him a troll, but let's just say he's a detractor to the 3YPC account. All right, and if Jake Fromm farts, he's gonna tell us the flavor on the account. All right. Jake Fromm threw three picks, period. And that was his bone of contention. But I tend to agree with you. You told me earlier that only one was really his fault. It was the worst pass of the season, by the way, and maybe the worst pass of his career, which was his first interception.
Yeah.
But the
other I feel like I'm hard on quarterbacks, and yet I'm disagreeing. I'm like, you know, I didn't think it was that bad.
Oh, my God. That first one was bad. He was on a dead back pedal and just yeah. Oh, wee.
But I see – I see pro quarterbacks. I've seen – if you've seen enough Dan Marino tape, you've seen Dan Marino do that 1,000 times. Or,
yeah, but Dan Marino is Dan Marino. Fromm, yeah, I don't think, has that type of arm.
Well, you know, I think what it was is – I don't think it was an arm thing there. I think it was just, you know, the defender was sitting on it and waiting for it, and that was the difference.
I think the defender was sitting there saying, there's no way he's going to throw it here. Oh, my God.
Well, no, I mean, the defender was squatting on that short. I mean, he was like there. He was like, you know, he's waiting for it. I think he was waiting for that. Actually, the bad on that play was not – I didn't think the bad on that was throwing it. And first off, if you watch the – it was a great interception. It took something good from that defensive back to make that interception. And like I said, he was squatting on it. And I didn't think it was that bad. The worst part about the interception was really the only bad – or not the only bad, but I mean, the most bad on that was how he handled the pressure. I mean, because a guy came in on the inside move, and it was more or less kind of a single guy. So you can make that guy miss, and instead of making the guy miss and keeping you know his relation to the line of scrimmage there, he really just kind of backed up and. You know, it looked like he might try to outrun him, but then he was like, no, there's no way I can outrun him. And so that's the negative there is you want him to handle pressure a little bit differently. And that shows up in a few places, I think, in Jake Fromm's in tape. But, you know, he's also a young player. He's a legit third year in Georgia. He's going to continue to develop. He's already, even from last year to this year, he developed a lot. And is getting a lot better. So if other guys can improve, I don't understand why this aspect of Jake Fromm's game can't improve. That was the negative on it. But otherwise, that was the only pick that he threw that was his fault, straight up. I mean, the other two were not his fault at all. I mean, first off, the third one, he literally hit the guy in the face mask. I was like, he practically hit the guy in the face mask on that. And then I looked at the replay and I was like, no, he actually yes. did hit the guy in the face mask.
Yeah, the guy put his hands up, the ball went through his hands, hit him in the face mask, and then of course got picked.
Yeah, I mean that, so no, not his fault whatsoever on that one. And then the second interception, the one before that, and that was a freshman wide receiver that ran the wrong route. And it was a clear miscommunication. He was clearly making up his route as he went. And this, I mean, they went and corrected it on the sidelines, and it was, and that was what it was. I mean, that wasn't on Jake Fromm at all. And so, you know, the, yeah, he had three picks, but only one was his fault. And so you can't hold that and the other two against him. And I'm not making excuses for him. There's a difference between making an excuse for a guy and just one, you know, with 100% accuracy saying what happened.
Yes.
And that is what happened. So you have to look at the game.
And I would also
came up short though in the game. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the real problem.
I would also tell people to, you know, be mindful of this Georgia team. You know, this Georgia team might not be as good. DeAndre Swift is a guy that I really like, and a guy that I probably would draft in this upcoming draft, but he is not Sony Michel. He is not Nick Chubb. Okay. And if anybody's noticed, Nick Chubb is kind of turning into a top flight performer in the NFL right now.
Oh yeah.
And we know Sony Michel is a productive back. So,
very good.
You know, this Georgia team, yeah, okay, they were ranked third and they were looking okay, but maybe they're just not that good, period. And, you know, he didn't have a lot of help in that game because South Carolina got smoked by Alabama. And, you know, they beat Georgia.
I thought that South Carolina defense was actually pretty decent against Alabama and has been this year. I think they've got some players there. But, yeah, it was a tough game. It's when you get picked twice like that and it's not your fault, that's going to be – and you got two drives that are wasted because of that, that's going to be tough. I think there were some other drives that happened or that didn't happen.
There was a fumbled snap also.
Yep, there's a fumbled snap.
And that was a drive that was looked like it was destined to end up in the end zone.
Mm-hmm. And there was also good in that drive. I mean, he did some significant good in that game, including, you know, he brought his team all the way down the field and scored the game tying touchdown. Yes. You know, during the final 3 minutes of the game. I mean, that's a pretty big time drive from a big time quarterback. And
how long was the drive? Was it 96 yards or something like that?
I mean, it was long. It was, so I mean, he really brought him down, and this is in the final minutes of the game. You know, you're losing by a touchdown, and he went down and got it. And they didn't get it in overtime. One of the overtimes, they turned the ball over because he hit the guy in the face mask and he decided not to catch it. Yeah. And then the other drive in overtime, if you notice that ball that he threw, the last pass he threw in the game, I mean, he was asking Robertson to adjust on that ball, and Robertson did not adjust on it. I mean, you can watch it over and over. You could see he was trying to back shoulder him and get him to adjust, and he threw him to the kind of the right spot for the coverage and where the leverage was on the defensive back and everything. And the wide receiver just couldn't get there, and he wasn't good enough. And that's the bottom line. And so that's why they ended up having to kick the field goal, and then Blankenship, you know, mind-bogglingly missed it.
Yes,
guy's good. I don't know why he missed that.
He's supposed to be really, really reliable, and wow, missing that kick was not a good
one. He looks like Baker Mayfield. Like if Baker Mayfield had an alter ego, like he'd put on these weird glasses and, like, you know, maybe messed up his hair a little bit.
Yeah, but like, I to be honest with you, it's, you know, maybe it's my ADD acting in, but kickers wearing 98 bothered me. Like I don't understand. It feels weird to me. You know,
quit acting like you actually tackle anybody.
Yeah, 98. Like, really? Like, this kid couldn't find another number, but 98? I'm pretty sure there's a defensive tackle somewhere saying, yeah, I wanted that number, but this
maybe
fucking guy has
more than 98.
Yeah. Which brings us to Joe Burrow. And I am utterly, absolutely confused on this guy because I've tried to do some work on him. And good God, does he check every single box, okay? He played high school football in Ohio. He's big, 6'4", 220 pounds. He was Mr. Ohio. He got accepted to Ohio State, got a scholarship for football to Ohio State. Now, he did get chased out of there, all right, by Dwayne Haskins, of all people. But he ends up in LSU, and, you know, well, you're looking at it. You're looking at the season he's having. He's all of a sudden getting himself into the Heisman chase. And that Florida game, First of all, it was a great football game. But, you know, he came in with, you know, he came through with flying colors again. I don't know what to make of him. There's a lot that I see that I like. I just don't know if he has the arm talent that these other guys have.
Not at all.
I tend to agree. I understand people. I don't want to see you in my mentions telling me that I don't know what the hell I'm talking about and that Jordan Love is a piece of crap. I understand Jordan Love is having a bad year. But you cannot compare them, man. I'm telling you. They just don't throw the same ball.
But he's gonna
have a really productive season. And if he beats Alabama, good Lord, is the hype train going to be coming in. Now, Pro Football Focus had a pretty laughable I don't know if you saw it. I think we talked about it earlier. A pretty laughable mock draft where they have him going number one to Cincinnati.
That's fine. That would mean like we missed on Tua, the Tua pick, the number one pick.
Yeah, but we still get him.
Still got a crack at Tua. That would be fucking a dream.
Although PFF has us passing on Tua not only once but twice, and Tua Tagovailoa going to the Chargers at 10.
Screw them. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. But I would say that if could you imagine how despondent we would be for 4 months, right? If we miss out, like we get the number two overall pick and the Bengals have number one. So, you know, the Bengals are getting a quarterback, right? I mean, you can try and make them offers, but they're going to be like, you know, fuck you. We're taking a quarterback.
Yes.
So we would be so despondent for 4 months. And then the name gets turned in and it's Joe Burrow instead of Tua Tagovailoa. Could you imagine like how high and drunk everybody in Miami would be that night?
Well, we're going to be in Las Vegas. So.
Oh, and well, I mean, everybody in Miami would be high and drunk and will be blank and drunk in Las Vegas. But yeah, I mean, could you imagine that? I mean, that would be incredible. That would be an incredible scenario. Let me tell you,
this guy checks some. First of all, he's a coach's son. You know, his father played at Nebraska, played in the NFL and CFL.
He's got those lizard eyes.
Okay.
You ever see him? Like, he's got bug eyes or like these reptile eyes.
A 40-year coaching career. Okay.
Joe Burrow did?
His father did.
Pretty sure Joe Burrow isn't 40 years old.
Okay. His grandmother scored 82 points in a basketball game. Like, this guy's cut out of, you know, he's the cookie cutter. Oh, my God. If Bill Parcells was still here, oh, boy, would he love him. This is a Bill Parcells guy.
Maybe.
He checks every single one of those boxes. But, my God, I don't see it. And I've had everybody in my time like, you got to start adding him to your quarterback tracker. And we did, you know, due to popular request. We added him to our quarterback tracker. So if you go to 5reasonsports.com and you go to the 3 YPC quarterback tracker, his last game against Florida is on there. So you could peruse every one of his throws. But, yeah, I just don't see it. The arm talent is not commensurate with these other prospects. Is he going to get drafted? Well, I'm pretty sure he is.
Okay. Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's going to get drafted. He's going to get drafted fairly high. And
I would say in the top 30, maybe top 40 for sure, I would say.
Well, he came into the year, I think the scouting services, you know, had him as a, you know, day three solid type, day three guy and kind of guy, sixth round, something like that. So meteoric rises happened with Carson Wentz. The pro scouting services rated him as a priority free agent heading into his final year at North Dakota State. But it was generally accepted that I think it was literally two guys that were blamed for this. They're like, they did the workup on him for the pro scouting service, for maybe it was Blesto, it might have been National Scouting, and gave him that priority free agent grade. And they're like, hey, they just made a mistake. And everybody else, like once the real evaluators kind of got their hands on him, they're like, what the hell are you talking about? So I don't think that happened in the case with Joe Burrow. So he would really be making a meteoric rise to get in that first round. But given the season that he's having thus far, it's understandable. Is he going to continue this? season the way that it's happened. I'm not so sure because, you know, he's faced some questionable defenses thus far. Florida does not have a questionable defense. I'm not saying that, but I will say they had some injuries during that game, and that affected his ability to do what he did against them. He does not have the arm talent that the other guys do, but the problem, that's not a problem because quite frankly, neither does Tua Tagovailoa. He doesn't have the arm talent that like Justin Herbert has, or, you know, Jake Fromm doesn't have the arm talent that, you know, like a Drew Locke or somebody like that, Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. The problem is that Joe Burrow is a step, a significant step even below like Tua Tagovailoa and Jordan, or sorry, Jake Fromm in terms of arm talent and his abilities. And it detracts. It does detract from his game at times. And it may be hard to see it this year because everything is going just right.
Yeah.
But against, you know, poor defenses with good – if you look at those first four games, I mean, Texas has a shitty defense. And they played Georgia Southern, Northwestern State, not Northwestern. Vanderbilt. Oh, God, Vanderbilt. Utah State's defense is not anything this year. And then there's the Florida game. And this Florida game obviously went really, really well for him. In part, I think injuries played a part in that. But he did do pretty well. Is he going to sustain that as the year goes on? Not based on what I've seen of him. I don't think so. But I'm open to it. We'll see. I just don't think – you know, listen, the league needs backups too, and high quality ones. And some of those high quality backups, they play games and they get famous and they do well for a time. Gardner Minshew is doing that right now in Jacksonville.
Absolutely.
I don't know if the NFL still thinks, you know, Gardner Minshew is going to end up being the guy, you know what I mean? In Jacksonville. So he's probably destined to be a backup, but he's a backup that's clearly able to do some things and you know, get your team through games and get them wins and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of what I see in store for Joe Burrow. Otherwise, I'm just not sure he's talented enough.
I agree. And, yeah, I just don't see it. I tried to, you know, turn myself on to him. I watched this entire game. I watched every throw. I rewatched it again early this morning. And I just don't see it. His pedigree. However, his pedigree is off the charts. 4-star recruit. I could go on and on with everything that he mm-hmm. that he accomplished to get himself to Ohio State and back up JT Barrett. But, you know, he didn't overtake JT Barrett. When Dwayne Haskins came to town, he chased him out of town, ended up in LSU. Now, he's going to have a good year this year. But, you know, mm-hmm. we'll see him head-to-head against Alabama. And if that game was any indication, Alabama LSU is going to be a shootout. So we're going to get to see plenty of these two quarterbacks.
I think look at Joe Burrow on, if people want to key in on something, you know, really get a look at him on third down, like as a passer, third and makeable. You know, I tend, it's not that I disregard the third and long situations like 10 plus to go. It's not that I disregard them. They're interesting to me because some guys can make that happen with their talent, their pure talent, and maybe you want to know that. But if you really want to drill down to what a guy, how reliable he is, looking him on third, and I don't, I mean, as far as I know, Joe Burrow is like 11 of 28, is converted 11 of 28 as a passer on third and makeable, which frankly isn't very good. And so I would key on that and see if he improves that as the year goes on, because a lot of first and second down stuff, that's where your offense really kicks in, like your, how well constructed your offense is, and you know, your running game and play action off of it, and how dangerous your receivers are and stuff like that. But I think third is when you really start to see where what a quarterback himself is made of.
All right. Well, this was a really meaty episode, and we haven't predicted the Bills Dolphins game, and we probably shouldn't either. But
do we? Do we should? Do we have to?
Do we even have to watch the game?
Yeah,
is the question.
Yeah.
But I'll go ahead and give a score: 20-10.
Yeah, I'll watch it.
20-10 Bills. How about that? Dolphins play a really competitive game against what I think is a playoff team. I think the Buffalo Bills will be in the playoffs this year. Okay, so that's an early prediction. How does 20 to 10 sound to you, Chris?
You know, I should be able to answer this question, but I should come loaded with this already. When was the last time that Ryan Fitzpatrick threw a touchdown for the Buffalo Bills?
Huh. For the Buffalo Bills. The last time it was probably against us, wasn't it?
You know, when he played in Buffalo in 2012, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that he throws the first touchdown for the Buffalo Bills since 2012. He's going to get pick sixed. And that's where I'm going with that. So yeah, I think that this is going to, their defense is absolutely incredible, or not incredible, but it's a lot better than ours, are a lot better than our offense. So I think that he's Fitzpatrick, a week of preparation for him is not the same as when he comes into the, I think he's the guy that comes into a game off the bench with energy and does really well. I don't know if he's a guy that starts it, you know, from the first snap and really has a good game against that Buffalo Bills defense. So Josh Allen looked like a friggin' genius against us the last time he played us. So yeah, why don't we go with like 30 to 6?
Okay, that's nice. That would install much more confidence in the tank. Okay, because I think my prediction
but 30 30 happen. Because in part because Fitzpatrick gets pick sixed. Remember, that's
yeah.
My prediction.
Oh yeah, absolutely, of course.
Yeah.
Well, all right, guys. You can't complain. We gave you everything. This is one meaty, meaty, meaty 3 yards per carry episode. We are inching toward our 100th episode. Should be sometime next week.
Wow.
And we hope to have Simon by then, you know, when he finishes gallivanting about Tokyo or all of Japan, because I think he's not
Japan,
only in Tokyo.
Yeah. Yeah, he's all over.
Yeah. But that's it. There is no more. We will talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.